This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And joining us is Adam Teicher for ESPN.com, covers the Chiefs. And, you know, since that game we saw together, actually, first I've been able to see a bunch of Chiefs games this year with the Rams and the Chiefs in 54-51 game. It seems like league-wide, all of a sudden, where everybody thought that the offense is just totally dominating, you know, all these offenses have been pulled back a little bit in the last couple weeks.
Yeah. You know, in the case of the Chiefs, you know, they missed Kareem Hunt. He was kind of their big play running back, and they don't really have anybody who can do the things he did for them on a down-to-down basis. So they really miss Kareem Hunt, and this is another nice complimentary piece in Sammy Watkins. So, you know, the Chiefs are down some guys. They've been playing without a couple starting offensive linemen. So, you know, they've had some injuries there as well. So the Chiefs haven't been whole for some time now, and not to say they can't overcome at least some of this, but you know, they've been held back a little bit. And then, you know, the problems defensively as well, where the teams have sort of played possession on the Chiefs and kind of limited their number of possessions. That's been a factor as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Is this kind of an overreaction? But it seems like without Sammy Watkins and without you know, Kareem Hunt, it's almost like it's taken about a touchdown a game away, because they scored 27 and 28 points, where, you know, they were on that run where there's, you know, 35 or more points a game. Would that be an overstatement?
No, I think that's about right. You know, they were averaging 36 a game going into the Baltimore game a couple weeks ago, and they've only gotten 27 against Baltimore and 28 against the Chargers. So that'd be about right. And, you know, again, there are a number of factors that go into that, but part of it is that, you know, the Chiefs just aren't the same right now on offense. The personnel just hasn't been what it was. And that's, you know, we know Tyreek Hill's not coming back, but that's one of the reasons the Chiefs are eager to get Sammy Watkins back.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And so, you know, and Tariq is, I mean, he was, I mean, 2 weeks ago, he was so banged up in that Baltimore game.
Yeah, he was limping around and still made some plays, helped the Chiefs win that game. But, yeah, you know, he hasn't been right. So, you know, that's another guy that the Chiefs need back to full speed for sure.
Oh, no doubt. So what, of course, Spencer Ware is going to miss the game. They're down to Damian Williams. How much is that taken away? Because the one thing that was with Hunt, he could make big plays running the football and big plays catching the football.
Right. Yeah, and the Chiefs could line him up in a variety of spots. And you know, he could help them out doing a number of different things. But they don't really have a guy who could do all of those things. You know, I'm wondering whether Damian Williams is better suited for what the Chiefs asked their backs to do than Spencer Ware. So I, from that aspect, I'm not sure the loss of Ware is a huge thing. You know, certainly for depth, and there are things that Spencer Ware does well. But Damian Williams is probably a more versatile back. He's better as a receiver and so I'm just wondering whether he's not better. So that may be one personnel change for the Chiefs that doesn't necessarily set them back. Now, if Williams gets hurt, then the Chiefs really have an issue.
Yeah, no question. But I tell you what, Patrick Mahomes, I mean, of the quarterbacks you've covered through the years, how unique and how good is he?
You've forgotten, John, which quarterback which team I've covered over the years.
Yeah, no, I haven't forgotten.
Have never had a guy like Pat Mahomes. And you know what? I think there's a lot of teams who've never had a guy like Pat Mahomes. I mean, he is unique. I mean, he can do a lot of things that a lot of guys cannot do, and that includes a lot of quarterbacks the Chiefs have had over the years. You know, you look at what the Chiefs have done at quarterback. This is their 59th season since the Chiefs came into the AFL at the time in 1960 as the Dallas Texans. The Chiefs have almost exclusively gone with some other team's cast-off at quarterback for 58 seasons. I mean, there a couple times they drafted guys, but they never really gave them a fair shot. And guys like Todd Blackledge back in the early 80s, and he was always being in and out of the lineup and put in and yanked out, and they never really committed to him. And there have been a couple other guys to a lesser extent, but and they've never settled on a guy and said, this is our guy, sink or swim. And so the first time the Chiefs have really tried this in their history, you know, tried it and committed to it, they got it right. So, you know, good for them. Maybe they ought to go, Mahomes was the first quarterback they drafted in 34 years in the first round. Maybe When his time is about up, they ought to try it again rather than going another 34 years without dipping their toe into the quarterback pool.
I think one of the big surprises is, in many ways, how Andy Reid has reinvented himself with the Chiefs. I mean, he came over as a pure West Coast offense guy. Then, I mean, he starts tinkering a little bit, with the college-type offenses. He implemented things that is there. And now to a point that he's about as advanced as any offensive play caller in the league with the things that he's doing with Patrick Mahomes and others.
Yeah, and what helps him is, number one, all the guys he's got. Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and now certainly Mahomes and Kareem Hunt when he was in the lineup and Watkins. I mean, that certainly helps, but you're right. He has kind of reinvented himself. And one thing that's happened since he's come to the Chiefs, he had a lot of the GM-type duties when he was his last several years with the Eagles. He had to do a lot of personnel stuff that he thought was tearing him away from the coaching part of it and doing these kinds of things. So when he and Clark Hunt, the Chiefs owner, first talked about him coming to Kansas City after the Eagles let him go back in 2013, in January of 2013, he told Clark Hunt he wasn't interested in doing the personnel side of it. He wanted there to be a GM that he could work with that was going to make all those decisions and do all those the personnel type decisions. Not that Reed's not involved or doesn't have a say. Of course he does, but he wanted a lot of that, a lot of legwork to be done by someone else that would free him up to be more of an offensive innovator. And that's kind of what you're seeing in Kansas City.
And it's really worked so well. But I guess the one thing that's going to be a little bit of the downside, of course, is that the staff is going to be continued to be rated because there's so many guys that have good offensive minds that know it. I mean, you saw Matt Nagy leave. I would imagine Eric Bieniemy is going to be, possibly leaving for head coaching jobs. I mean, how many guys could be taken off that staff for head coaching opportunities?
Yeah, well, you know what? He's starting to plan ahead. That's what he's doing. He wanted Matt Nagy to come with him when he left the Eagles for the Chiefs, knowing that Doug Peterson may get a shot at some point to be a head coach. And Nagy got his his chance to be a head coach this year. But even last year, Reed was preparing Eric Bieniemy, telling him, hey, listen, Eric Bieniemy was a running back coach for a long time and, of course, played running back for many years in the NFL. And he was more involved maybe in the running game than in the passing part. I mean, and Andy Reed told him, listen, you may be losing Nagy at the end of the year. If you want to be considered for offensive coordinator, you need to expand your horizons become more well-rounded in our offense if you want to be considered for that. And he did, and Reed promoted him to offensive coordinator. So, Reed's preparing ahead. They last year they also hired a guy who played for him briefly with the Eagles, a quarterback by the name of Mike Kafka. He brought him in last year. His title was something like offensive assistant. But basically what he did was, his job was to work with Pat Mahomes. He was kind of Pat Mahomes' personal coach last year when Mahomes was a rookie and not playing. And then, but Reed had an eye on this and said, hey, listen, if you handle this assignment well and we lose Matt Nagy, you're going to get bumped up to quarterback's coach. So and that's what happened. Nagy left and they promoted Kafka. And Kafka's kind of in that coaching pipeline, that offensive coaching pipeline. So, if they lose Eric Bieniemy, whether it's this year, next year, whenever, I think Mike Kafka is kind of the next in line, and Andy Reid's probably thinking about who he wants to put in that pipeline behind Kafka. So, it's kind of a process that they've been going and been working on, and it seems to be working out for the Chiefs for sure.
That's pretty good. So now what's happened to the defense? That's the thing I think has been one of the baffling stories. I mean, they got three great pass rushers, and they can get the sacks. But stopping the run has been a problem. The pass defense has been a problem. What's gone wrong with that this year?
Yeah, there's a lot that's going wrong for sure. The Chiefs put a lot of resources into fixing their run defense this year. They drafted their starting nose tackle, Derek Nnadi from Florida State. They drafted him in the third round. They signed a backup who plays as part of a rotation, and Xavier Williams. They signed their big free agent, defensive free agent signing was Anthony Hitchens from the Cowboys. They're getting Reggie Ragland back and healthy this year. They traded for him last year and thought that he would have an impact, but none of those guys is having a huge impact right now. So their run defense, and don't forget that Eric Berry's been one of their better run defenders, and he only played for half a game this season. He just came back for half of the Chargers game last week, so they haven't had him as well, and it's. So it's been a real problem for them. They just haven't played the run consistently at all, and that's something they need to get better at. If the defense is going to hold up its share of the load for sure, the run defense is going to have to improve or at least make minor gains here in the next few weeks. One thing they've been able to do for sure is rush the quarterback, but I think they're second in the league in sacks, but. Even that deserted them toward the end of the game against the Chargers. They weren't successful in getting the Phillip Rivers on those last two drives.
And I guess the other problem, too, has been the secondary because, they've almost given up 4,000 yards passing, which, sure. For a defense that you think, was going to be better, that's been another problem.
Yeah, some of that is a little bit cosmetic because the Chiefs have been ahead a lot this year and teams have had to throw on them. So, some of that is garbage time stats, but not all of it. The Chiefs came into the season in the training camp with Eric Berry and Daniel Sorensen as their starting safeties, and they lose both guys in training camp and really had to scramble at that position. They didn't have a lot of depth to begin with behind Berry and Sorensen, and now they're scrambling a little bit. They had to go sign Ron Parker, who played for them for a number of years, and the Chiefs cut him last winter. Signed with the Falcons, went to camp with the Falcons. The Falcons cut him right before the start of the year. The Chiefs not only signed him, but he started every game for them. So that tells you a little bit about how the Chiefs are scrambling at safety. They drafted a kid they really liked by the name of Armani Watts, and he was playing some early in the year, and then he was injured, and he's on IR now. So their depth has really been tested at safety and just hasn't played very well. And they've been spotty, I guess you could say, at corner. I don't think the numbers reflect it, but they've probably played better than what the numbers show at corner. But it's not been consistent. I mean, it's been spotty as well. So it just hasn't fit together for them. And the back end is, particularly at safety, it's been a mess at times.
And then I would imagine Berry played a half last. Is he going to play the whole game, or is he still going to be on a little bit of a pitch count?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting choice. I know that it's going to be more than what he played last week. And whether it's a full game, we'll have to see. The goal of the Chiefs all along was to get him back to full speed to the playoffs. And while this game against Seattle tomorrow night is an important game, it's not a must-win for the Chiefs. So unless they think he's ready, he won't be going the full complement of plays. But where I think the Chiefs maybe erred with him last week is that they put him on a snap count, which is understandable for a guy who hadn't played in a game for a year and a half or something like that. But they gave him all the snaps early in the game, and I know they could have used him on those late drives that the Chargers put together, particularly on the 2-point conversion when the Chiefs blew an assignment and left Mike Williams uncovered in the end zone. I mean, you got to believe that he would have helped make a play somewhere on one of those two drives. It might have helped win him the game. So if he's going to be on somewhat of a limited snap count again against the Seahawks, you'd like to think that maybe the Chiefs would be a little more smart about it and maybe give him a little bit early in the game, a little bit in the middle of the game, and then if they need to play him some at the end as well.
Okay, well, it's good. Should be an interesting game tomorrow night. Of course, we'll know the results of what happens with the Chargers later today and see how that affects the division. Hey, Adam, looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. Should be an interesting night.
Absolutely, John. Looking forward to it.
All right, Adam Teicher from ESPN.com. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ben in Spanaway. Hey, Ben.
Hey, JC. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Yeah, great. I've talked to you before. I think the last time we talked, it was the Minnesota game or maybe the 49ers.
Okay.
Just wanted to talk a couple of things. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, you and your family and all the listeners, like
same
everybody else.
Thank you.
I want to, before I get off on this rant, I just had a couple of comments. What do you think of this Bo Scarborough? The thing I heard of Pete Carroll the other day, and it really intrigues me, is when he says, hey, this back's a thumper.
Mm-hmm.
And that word stood out to me because we know what thumper means to Pete Carroll.
Right.
That means this kid likes to hit. What do you know about him?
Well, I mean, what you know is, I mean, he comes up with Alabama. He's kind of, you know, he's a little bit of a big back and all that. And kind of, you know, it's brought in as an insurance policy. The insurance policy being, you know, in case, you know, Penny doesn't play this week and one of the other two backs get hurt, you know, they wanted a thumper type of back to be available. Now, if Penny plays, I'm sure that Bo's going to be inactive. But, you know, he's a draft choice. I mean, he's, you know, bounced to a couple teams. But, you know, again, you've seen that, you know, there's a style of runner that they want, and they want that physical type of back. And he is a physical back that may be able to do some things if they need him. But right now, they don't know if they need him.
Sure. I think it's going to be a great pickup. I've followed the Seahawks from the day they came out, John.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the point. You know, we picked up that linebacker that went from Atlanta to Jacksonville, right? I can't think of his name. And we
from
picked
Atlanta
him up a couple
to
of weeks
Jackson,
ago.
Are you, I'm trying to think, are you talking about Emmanuel or?
Yeah, I think
Emmanuel Ellerby.
Atlanta drafted him, then he went to Jacksonville staff, and we picked him up off their pup list or something,
okay,
or not
okay.
their pup list, but
yeah,
off
yeah.
their waiver wire or something, and signed him.
Right.
And I don't remember in a Pete Carroll era when we picked up a really couple good players late in the season, you know, that could play mm-hmm. next year, and people are going to be, where did the Seahawks get these guys?
Right.
It seems like Pete Carroll should be coach of the year because, I mean, he's brought this team to the brink of the playoffs, and he's still looking for talent, you know, and picking up these guys that could perform for the next 10 years for us. Why he's trying to fight for his life in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing coaching job.
Really is, and John Snyder does such a good job getting that talent for him. And I think that you know that's the idea. You know, if you have a guy that you got a plan and you know what you want, and that's what's so good about Pete because you know he has specifics on what he wants at certain positions. And now the idea is just go get those type of players, and that's what John Snyder is so good at doing.
You know, I remember a few years ago, and see if you remember this, but you remember when Jim Mora was coaching in Atlanta?
Yeah.
And they showed him on Monday Night Football. He went down there, and I don't know who the defensive back was, but he went down there, and he was kind of talking, and they showed on the sidelines,
mm-hmm.
and the defensive back sniffed some smelling salts, and then he handed it to Jim Mora.
Right.
And he sniffed it.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And it was just amazing, because what I say that for is, it kind of reminds me of how Ken Norton acts. I mean, I see Ken Norton on the sidelines. He's spanking people on the rear. He's jumping up and down. He's patting them on the head. It's like, I swear, sometimes he's like, give me some pads and a helmet.
Oh,
I
no,
want to go
no
play.
Doubt. I mean, he's such a good coach. You know, and I think that you didn't know how he was going to be able to translate as a defensive play caller. But, I mean, as a linebacker coach, it was just so good. And now you can see as a defensive play caller, he does such a good job.
Yeah, and like that other caller was saying about the coaches stepping up in Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
I think the same thing, and that was my other point. You know, I'll get off here to let everybody else on, but I think, you know, when Norton came here, it's the same thing. You know, do you want to step up your game? I think he could be a great head coach one day. I don't want to see him leave, but maybe he's heir apparent to Pete Carroll, you know. But Carroll's going to coach till he's 100. But
right, agreed.
Well, what a great guy. I mean, I don't know that our defense – has been so strong when I picked him for 5 wins, and Norton's got people blitzing. He's faking the blitz. We're jumping around, and people don't know what this defense can do anymore because Norton's got him so active.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get off here, John. Thank you very much.
Hey, Ben, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, John. Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas
to you.
And
yours. Okay. I got a question. You know, if the Seahawks win the toss, why not take the ball first knowing who Kansas City is?
No, I mean, it's a consideration, but it seems like most teams just take the tack that it's like, you know, you'd rather get the ball back in the beginning of the second half. And one thing that, good quarterbacks, and particularly Russell Wilson, seems to be able to do, if he gets the ball in the final possession of the first half, you know, he can usually try to get a drive for a field goal or a touchdown, and that's such a big momentum changer. If you can do that, and then come back and get the ball at the beginning of the second half, because that could be a 10 to 14 point swing in the game. So that seems to be the strategy that most coaches seem to have. I mean, it's gone up to like, what, 90-some, 95% as far as you win the toss, you make the kick. But, I think in this one, it's probably one that, you want to try to keep them off the field as much as possible, and you don't want them to start the second half with the ball. So I think it's still going to be the same philosophy.
Okay, last week I was talking about every team in the NFL has its flaws.
Right.
And I just been thinking about this past week, about the greatest teams of all time, like there's 70 Steelers that won 4 Super Bowls. Did they have flaws too?
Yeah.
What were they?
Well, the flaw, let's see, because there wasn't any flaws on defense, and because they had great coverage, great safeties, great corners, great linebackers in that Hall of Famers. I guess that, they ran the ball well. Certainly they developed the pass game well. And again, that's why, there were so few, I guess maybe depth on the offensive line. If they got one or two guys hurt there, then there was going to be a little bit of a problem. I mean, tight end was good, but not great. It was Benny Cunningham. They certainly had depth at the running back position. A wide receiver, two Hall of Fame wide receivers, there's no knock there. I mean, there is very few holes, but I guess you can say maybe a few little things on depth in case a couple guys got hurt.
Yeah, and how about the 72 Dolphins that went undefeated? Did they have flaws?
They had the killer bees on defense, and so you can maybe say maybe one linebacker or so short. I think that you can possibly say that tight end might have been a little bit weak. I mean, maybe running back. When you have Zonka and all those guys, they're fine. But, still just a little bit of depth. But that's the thing. I mean, the great teams were pretty well filled up. And now all you have to do is look at the number of Hall of Famers on those great teams.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. And once again, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet. Jet, how are you?
Ho, ho, ho. Hello, Dr. John.
Merry Christmas. Is there ever a Merry Christmas for Jet fans?
About 48 years ago?
About that, yeah.
Before I get sidetracked here, I just want to wish you and Mrs. C the best of Christmas and happy holidays. And I know you guys got a lot to be thankful for this year. And the best to you. And because it's the most wonderful time of the year, I'll even give a shout-out to the Irish one and his family and wish Irish Mankey a very happy holiday and perhaps an orange New Year.
An orange New Year. That would be very nice.
As far as the holidays go, as far as Jet fans go, the most wonderful time of the year is April. The draft is when your hope springs eternal, and you're hoping that Pete Rozelle will still leave, the ghost of Pete Rozelle will still leave something wonderful under your Christmas, under your draft tree.
Right, agreed. But of course, I mean, big one coming up here pretty soon because, as you know, Black Monday is coming up and there'll be a coaching change.
God, I hope so, man. Yeah, it was just painful. Well, I'm no big Pete Carroll fan, but I got to give him his props this year. He's done a heck of a job with this team, and I think this is by far his best year of coaching ever. But when you were talking, it's like him and Josh Schneider are just, walking, hand in glove, attached at the hip, and these guys share the same vision, and it's just, even when things don't go right at the start of the season, during the course of the season, they're able, because they're on the same page, to go out and adjust, make the changes, get the players that Pete Carroll is looking for, and this year in particular really shows that how they're on the same page and able to make those acquisitions. And I was thinking, that's been one of the keys to the Jets' success these past 10 years or so, in that how the GM and the coaches have been on the same page, and that's so why the Jets have been in the playoffs pretty much into the last 10 years.
Isn't it funny, you talk about revisionist history, because I know, talking to Mike Maccagnan, he's told me how well he and Todd Bowles are together on personnel, and now we find out it's not the case.
Well, John, I mean, come on. You know, he keeps drafting defensive tackles, and Todd Bowles keeps insisting on playing a 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
And they still don't have a nose guard. They haven't had a nose guard since Ryan left. You know, I mean, don't tell me they're on the same page.
I know they're not.
Yeah, they're trying to get him quarterback, or cornerbacks, I should say. But he's not getting the cornerbacks, the type of cornerbacks that Todd Bowles wants to work with. You know, pretty much Avery Williamson is about the only defensive guy that he's gotten for Todd Bowles, who's a as opposed to, in addition to Jamal Adams,
mm-hmm.
and I guess Marcus May, that are guys that, you know, Todd Bowles would like to work with in his defensive mindset. Other than that, I mean, he's been drafted for a 4-3. And they're not on the same page. And
Agreed. Again,
this year, I mean, they've got offensive linemen that just are not. John Carpenter's a classic example. A brilliant free agent pickup when they were playing, you know, heads up, man to man, you know, mano a mano football. As we saw, he couldn't handle the zone blocking here, but he fit perfectly in the Jets scheme that they've been running ever since Callahan was here. Okay? So this year, what do? They go to a zone blocking scheme. Okay, you got Brian Winters, can't handle it. You got Jeff Carpenter, can't handle it. You know, and it's just been a freaking fiasco. So they've never been on the same page.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, agreed. It's funny because, you know, they mouth the words that they are on the same page, and they're not.
No, they're not. And you can see it in the players that Maccagnan keeps bringing in. They just aren't fitting what Bowles is trying to do. And, of course, the other problem is, quite frankly, you know, in 4 years, Bowles is on his third offensive coordinator. So how do you consistently draft or bring in players to meet an offensive system that's chronically changing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, I mean, maybe with defense offensive linemen you can because you're not changing the blocking scheme. But when you're changing the configuration of the offensive scheme, I mean, your skill players got to match. And they haven't.
It amazes me. Yeah, and of course, you would have to think that you know, they're going to hire an offensive head coach, and they've got to go to a 4-3.
Yeah.
Have to.
I mean, you've got to play to your talents, and that's what really is, I think, the most frustrating. And even when Ryan was there and they were still drafting defensive tackles, he was savvy enough and shrewd enough to make the most of his the talent of his offense. Of his defensive players. You know, I mean, David Harris was not a linebacker that, skill set-wise, that Rex Ryan was really looking for because he wasn't very fast. He couldn't drop back in coverage. But he found a way to make him work. You know, I mean, he found a way to make all these parts work, whether he inherited them or whether he chose them. You know, that's part of Rex's, I think, brilliance on defense, in addition to his schemes, which were novel and now have been copied in everybody's, you know, adjusted to it at mm-hmm. this point. But that's what Bowles just is not capable of doing, is meshing whatever system he's trying to put in to the talent that he has. And that's another drawback I see with Bowles. But, you know, ultimately, you got to hang this one on the Johnson brothers because, I mean, you know, they had the shotgun marriage with Idzik and Ryan, and now they've got the shotgun marriage with Bowles and Maccagnan. And, I mean, how many more times do you have to do it before you realize, one, that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And how many four defensive coaches do you have? I know the defensive-minded coaches, basically since Parcells was there, but certainly since Al Groh replaced them. And that's what, 18 years, 19 years now?
Right.
And what have you gotten those last 19 years? Nothing.
Now, it's sad, and what I wonder now, I think the job is somewhat attractive in one sense because, you know, you do get Sam Darnold. And that, of course, could put them toward the top of the list. But is that going to be a top of a list type item? Is that going to be a team that really you want to go to? It's still going to be debatable.
Well, if I was somebody that had a choice, I'd rather go to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one, you don't have to deal with the New York media,
right,
unless that's your bag. And two, I think they're about 2 years ahead of the Jets from a talent collection standpoint. So I think they're ready to make that next step. You know, next year, then the following year, where the Jets are still 1 to 2 years behind even making that next step.
Right.
So I'd rather go to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. And there's not that many offensive geniuses out there really, that I think that you could hang your hat on at this point.
Right.
I mean, where do they go shopping for an offensive head coach?
When they fired John DeFilippo in Minnesota, that took away one option. And it's like, do you go for Matt LaFleur? Do you go for Zach Taylor? I mean, you know, do you go for Eric Bieniemy? I mean, there's just, you know, it's just sad to think that, the options are so limited. And that's why I think coaches or general owners make mistakes by having so many firings.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that we've seen from the way the clubhouse has been stripped down and is kind of languishing a little bit is I think you need a coach with more experience to kind of come in there and kind of corral these guys a little bit. You know, pick your leaders out, make them your leaders, and then shield them a little bit. But it's been like a headless monster in that clubhouse now for, 3 years, four
right.
years. And we've seen it with all the perpetual off-the-field screw-ups and also on-the-field screw-ups, lack of concentration with untimely penalties and misplays and stuff. So I really think that this franchise, that clubhouse, probably needs a more experienced head coach who everybody can kind of rally behind,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to somebody, again, another new first-year head coach that we've had, the last 8, 10 years?
Right. It's sad, but again, it's Christmas, the Jets are out of it, and the Prozac has to be there awaiting as they get two more games to play.
All I can say, John, is I hope Santa leaves me two more losses under the tree, unless, of course, they beat the Patriots that last game of the season. I will give up the draft picks, because they're sitting pretty now. I mean, if they lose out,
mm-hmm.
they're at least guaranteed the number three pick.
Right.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
That's not bad.
But I don't want them, and... like last week, Darnold plays well, but they lose. Okay, I like that. That's what I want. I don't want a repeat of the Buffalo situation.
Right.
Because I want them to get that, two or three pick. Unless, of course, I will trade all that for a Week 17 victory up in Foxborough.
Always a good one. Hey, have a great Christmas, Jed.
Take care, John, and I'll talk to you next year, buddy.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Menke. Irish Menke, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton, and Merry Christmas to you and Mrs. Clayton.
Merry Christmas to you.
And quickly, thank you, Jeff, for the kind words. Listen to your Christmas music and watch the Irish. It'll take away some of the pain of your Jets. I know I've been there through those lean years with the Irish, similar to what you're doing right now. Go Irish, Jeff! And Mr. Clayton.
Yes.
How about those Irish? Two things real quick here. Your year this past year, unbelievable year for you. You went national as a sideline reporter.
Right.
You're a writer by heart, and you got to go to the mecca of newspapers back there in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of stuff.
It's
you
been
launched
good.
Your own website. It's been one heck of a good year for you, Mr. Clayton.
It's been a very good one. I appreciate that.
Yes, it has. And you're no better man, more deserving, Mr. Clayton. No doubt about it. So, and it's been that way for the Irish, too,
it's
Mr.
It's been a very
Clayton.
Good year for the Irish.
One big thing to talk about quickly. They're getting the stadium ready for New Year's Day, Mr. Clayton.
Oh, they are? Okay.
They're going to have an NHL Winter Classic hockey game.
Wow.
The Blackhawks and the Bruins will be squaring off in Notre Dame Stadium January 1st, Mr. Clayton.
That should be fun.
Wow, wow, wow. And the Irish, next Saturday, the Cotton Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, the Irish love the Cotton Bowl, Mr. Clayton. Their record at the Cotton Bowl for these big events is 5-2.
Wow.
It's a friendly place for the Irish. And how about all those All-Americans? How about Coach Kelly getting his second Coach of the Year?
It was
from
a good
the
one.
AP.
Well, when you go undefeated, that does help.
It does. How about Tommy Reese? Tommy Reese, the quarterback coach, was named Quarterback Coach of the Year
mm-hmm.
in the trade. He beat out schools like Alabama, Ohio State, Texas, Clemson, for the honors. I'm telling you, you had a great year, and my beloved Irish had a fantastic year, Mr. Clayton.
And we'll see how it concludes next week in Cottontown.
No, 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 Mr. Clayton. The Irish will march on, and they will go to the national championship game.
Okay, well, we'll see about that. We'll take it one game at a time. But, hey, have a happy Christmas, happy holidays.
Merry Christmas, go Irish, Mr. Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Mike. Mike, how are you?
Hi, John.
How's it going?
Going well. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Oh, I hope you and Pat have a great Christmas.
Well, thank you for that.
I have two questions. Let me get to the first one.
Yeah.
The most important one first is what's up with the Graz? Is he okay? I'm worried about him like I was worried about you last year at this time. So.
Yeah, I mean, he's going through a little bit right now, but things are getting positive, and you know, expect him back hopefully very soon.
Good, good. I wish him well. If he's listening, Merry Christmas, Graz. And secondly, there's been some talk, even on 710, that Doug Baldwin might not be back next year.
See, I don't buy that. I think that he's proven his value, particularly in the last couple of weeks. I mean, and I know that Brady Henderson of ESPN.com got a great stat as far as what Russell Wilson's stats are when Doug Baldwin plays and when he doesn't play, and it's a dramatic change when he doesn't play. So, in a time right now, I mean, maybe they might have to ask to readjust his contract, but at this stage, I think he is going to be back.
No matter how big the money he's asking for.
Well, again, he's under contract, so it's like you can't ask for money. I mean, he's an $11 million wide receiver, and, you know, again, they've got $65 million of cap room, and I don't think they want to create another opening for another wide receiver. They want to build to the wide receiving core, not take it down.
Right, that's what I was thinking. So, okay, well, thank you, John.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. I mean, there's like about a 30-40% drop in Russell Wilson's quarterback rating. And again, I think what you can see is that Doug does such a great job of positioning himself for where the quarterback can throw it and get those big plays. I mean, that's why I just would not envision that there's going to be any change there. He's just too valuable to the team, and there's no need for it. They've got plenty of cap room. I mean, if it's going to be something that they wonder about, then you sort that out in training camp, not necessarily now or after the season. So, no, I think he will be back because, again, this is not a team at the moment that has to create cap room. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And, again, what's, I guess, the good news is they announced in Dallas a little over a week ago that the cap was going to go up to 187 and maybe as much as 191. I think it's going to be $192 million, which, again, that gives a little bit more room. And, of course, Seattle's sitting in the top 10 as far as room. Now, of course, they've got a lot of business to do. They've got to do something with Frank Clark. They probably have to franchise him. Eventually have to get something done with Russell Wilson. They have to see what they want to do with the two guard positions because you've got Fluker up and you've got Sweezy up. You know, they're both at 1.5 and probably want to command $4 to $6 million a year. I don't know if they're going to be able to get both done. Justin Coleman's going to be up. They've got to make a decision on K.J. Wright. And, of course, K.J. Wright is looking like he's going to play tomorrow, so they'll get him back in the lineup. That's going to be encouraging. So, yeah, they got business to do, but they also have money to do the business with. And, of course, you make the playoffs and you start to build from there. I think that you can see things are in a pretty good state as far as where this team is. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. As we get to that, of course, coming up next, we're going to talk to Michael Sean Duggar, get his thoughts on this game coming up. Again, it's not going to be easy. You know, injuries at the safety position, of course, aren't going to help, but it does look like Bradley McDougal is going to be back. They are not going to have Tedrick Thompson, so Delano Hill is going to be playing in this game. But again, coming back next, we're going to take Michael Sean Duggar from The Athletic. Talk to him. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.